Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell other people about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program. I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. So for our first show of 2020, it seems like a good idea to revisit one of the more significant stories in Northumberland, the ongoing battle with drugs across the county. Following a number of key arrests over the past few months, plus a shocking announcement regarding a more deadly form of drug suspected to be in our region, it is appropriate to talk once more about the state of the opioid situation and some of the developing issues we have coming forward since July, when we began examining what was going on. Certainly, a lot has happened, and there is a more vocal public debate taking place since then. So let's get started. Back in July, then Deputy Chief Paul Vandegraaff sat in the same chair across from me, and we talked about opioids. It was the first of a series of interviews done by Consider This around the emerging situation. You will recall Peterborough, Belleville, and Oshawa announced their communities were facing a crisis, while Northumberland had yet to, publicly at least, address the nature of what was taking place. That was about 5 months ago. Since then, much has changed. Besides the emergence of a citizen group in the Chapel Street area of Coburg, and downtown business people have become more vocal about their concerns with illegal drugs and those who use them. Greenwood Coalition has expanded its operation to Coburg to meet the growing demand of those seeking help. But it has also become a topic of discussion amongst many, both in person and on social media. Since our last conversation, the deputy chief was promoted. So here to discuss the police response to what is taking place in Coburg is Coburg Police Chief Paul Vandegraaff. Welcome, Chief.
Thanks very much for having me.
I want to begin with a press release from Monday announcing a pink powdery substance, and I'm quoting here, during an investigation. Through a confirmed, though unconfirmed at this time, police suspect the substance to be fentanyl mixed with etzazolam. Am I pronouncing that right?
Etzazolam. Yeah, I'm going to guess that's right. Yeah.
So first of all, what is this stuff and why is it significant? Why are you issuing this press release?
You know what? It's one of those great partnerships we have with the local health unit. And when we discovered this in one of our more recent arrests, or I should say one of our recent incidents, when we struggle with this opioid epidemic, so when we find new things and new trends, we share it with our neighborhood partners. So this actually came from Kawartha Lakes. They were the first police service to say, hey, you have this etzolam mixed in, and we hadn't seen that jurisdictionally. And this is more significant because it does inhibit the positive effects of naloxone. So now when people are struggling with addictions and they're potentially on an overdose circumstance, if we have fentanyl laced with etzolam, we could inhibit the abilities for emergency service personnel to save this person's life.
So etzolam is not approved by Canadian drug authorities.
Nope.
And it's not approved in the United States either.
No, it was an anxiety drug, as best I understand. It has its, its foundation or its roots in the Chinese market. There's no approved use for it right now in Canada.
So I've seen it described also as Valium times 10.
Sure.
So making you very, very drowsy. It's supposed to help deal with anxiety and hyperactivity. So what then happens, what's the impact on the user? So if somebody takes this, what's the danger to them? You mentioned earlier a little bit.
Yeah, so the issue is, and when we put out the public safety message, it's because we hadn't seen this in our jurisdiction. So the Kawartha, Peterborough, Northumberland County, probably Hastings County. So when this substance was seen to be mixed with fentanyl locally, we wanted to share that information with both our broader public, but as well as with the greater province, so that we can all say this is what it here. And again, the big impact is this does have an inhibiting content, so that the naloxone being used by our officers when they arrive on an overdose call or the paramedics, this could inhibit the positive effects of naloxone and bringing somebody out of that overdose state.
Also, too, I know some drug users will use naloxone as well to bring people.
That's right.
So it's a danger to them. But where were the circumstances, though, under which Did we discover this?
So we discovered this, and we're using the word suspected because it's not until we get proper testing done through the Center of Forensic Sciences. So we use our best information available to us. We send it away for testing. So once we get confirmed, that's why the press release talks about the possible suspect. So we can't confirm 100% that's what it is.
Was this during some kind of an investigation?
Yeah, unfortunately, we had a death most recently. We had an overdose death and I'll leave it at that. But we had a young person pass away again due to overdose, due to fentanyl, and that's where this substance was seemed to be mixed with fentanyl.
So it's here and
these drugs come from outside of Coburg. We don't know of anybody manufacturing or doing the mixing of that fentanyl here. So that's come from what we understand the Greater Toronto area. And we just wanted to make sure that any of our users in our community are aware that the kind of the product that's out there.
So help listeners understand, what would cause drug dealers to do this? I mean, you would think that if there was the naloxone helps people and that then allows their users to live and use more and buy more and make money for them. Why would they want to put something so deadly mixed in with a drug?
So a lot of the drugs that we talk about are cocaine, more of a traditional like 80s and 90s. They get mixed with a lot of byproducts, and we've heard about rat poison being mixed with cocaine and different things. I'm not so sure that somebody, and I can't get into the head of these people who are manufacturing this stuff, but maybe they put it in because of, as you said, of its calming principles. Maybe they try to create a different kind of fentanyl, more kick, more oomph. And they didn't understand the full scope of what this could do. Or they did it intentionally. I don't know. For me to put myself in the heads of people who would do this, I just can't go there. But I did order, the minute we heard this was occurred, we did order a full-out investigation. And we're considering our overdose death in this case a suspicious death in the sense that we want to know what exactly is going on.
Okay. When we last spoke about the opioid situation, you made a couple of comments, and I'd like to play back one of those comments.
I don't know that I would use the word crisis, but as we spoke earlier, the numbers speak for themselves. Now, as Jay indicated, we are dealing with the same person a few times in these. However, it is definitely something that we have to put our minds to, or it will be a crisis. And we did speak about Chief Gignac and Belleville talking about a national task force. I would support him in his initiative in that we have to get ahead of this. Right now we're behind and we're chasing it. So.
Okay, so that's when we spoke in July. That's how you described the situation. Has your perspective changed since July?
Yeah, I'm the chief now. So I guess my perspective has changed. No, I'm still not going to use the word crisis because I want to use the word epidemic. And I think we really have to live in the world of epidemic.
Why that?
Because this is a health issue. There's a crime piece to this, and I want to talk about that. But the overall issue around this particular opioid problem that's facing communities, I still stand by we need to have a national task force on this. I still see that there's greater opportunity for health units, police, the Center of Forensic Sciences, educators, academics to come together to truly, truly understand this. Grassroots level, people from lived experience or people serving that community. I want to stand in the word of epidemic. Since July, I was promoted, given the great honor of being chief of police. And every chief has an agenda, if you will. And in conversations with my police services board, they wanted to take a very strong approach, a law enforcement approach to this opioid problem, this epidemic. And I was able to do that. So what we were able to do, and we were able to redeploy some resources within our service, move some people around. And yes, we've seen a lot of arrests. Yes, we've seen a lot of drugs taken off the street. Yes, we've seen a lot of people held accountable for their criminal behavior in our community. And that is us getting ahead of it, to go back to my comments. That is me positioning the police service to really get ahead of this. We understand that people are in our community who are addicted to a variety of, be it marijuana or fentanyl or alcohol, whatever their addictions issue are. We are going to stand behind a harm reduction strategy. We're going to work towards serving those people. Our focus has really been, and we talked about this at our town hall meeting, but our focus as a police service is those people who are bringing these drugs in, we're going to focus our attention on arresting those people, holding those people accountable, a really, really strong police presence. if we stumble upon an opioid overdose, or we encounter a person in the streets who's struggling, we're not going to necessarily arrest them because they have some drugs on them and they're also in the middle of an overdose crisis. We're going to get them the health care that they so deserve and need. But if we can address the crime piece, and that's what my agenda has been since taking over in August.
Well, let's go back just for a second.
Yeah.
I don't want to get too deep in the weeds, but what's the difference between an epidemic and a crisis? Because you're drawing a distinction, and I want people to understand why we're not calling it a crisis.
Yeah, see, a crisis, I don't know that does it justice. I think we can call it an opioid crisis. Yeah, we have an opioid crisis, but then we had a cocaine crisis in the late 90s, early. Then we had a psychotropic drug crisis in the 60s and the 70s. I think we need to start using the words epidemic. When we use the words epidemic, then we can bring all players to the table to help us solve this. This is not a police problem. There is drug trafficking, and there's drug arrests that are going to be done, but this is not solely on the backs of the police to solve. We can't. And if anybody is looking at just the police, the members of our police service to solve this crisis, we're not going to be successful. So when I use the word epidemic, it brings more players to the table. It brings more opportunity for many people to do this giant lift. And it is a giant lift.
Okay, so let's then put some numbers to this,
because yep.
I think numbers often tell the tale. So you released just yesterday where a car was pulled over in a routine traffic check, and there was a pile of drug paraphernalia was found along with some cash and some drugs. And I've noticed many arrests where there's been one charge, but then there's also been a quantity of drugs found as well. So let's start there. Can you help us? Because there was quite a number of arrests, especially going back in November. There was one on November 5th. There was multiple charges on November 8th. There were several charges laid on November 14th, the 27th, the 4th, the 11th. And that's just some of the stuff that we've seen in the public realm. So bring this all into focus for us. Give us a picture statistically.
Yeah, am I not the happiest chief of police going right now? I have to be. The men and women of our police service have really bought into our approach. When we have a traffic stop, that's a routine officer on routine patrol providing safety to the members of the community. They recognize somebody operating a motor vehicle is known to them. This officer knows the vehicle, knows the person, knows the conditions the persons are on, conducts a traffic stop. During the course of that investigation, realizes this person's breaching several conditions of a court bail condition. He's arrested for those, and then during that search, we find crystal meth or methamphetamine. So here again, we have somebody who's already before the courts on drug-related matters, who's into the community on release conditions, which I have publicly been not necessarily supportive of, but I understand that there is a justice system and it works, and that people are entitled to second, third, fourth, fifth, and 19th chances. In this particular case, the person was on conditions. He was in our community. The officer recognized this person to be breaching their conditions, effected an arrest, and during the course of that arrest, found more drugs and took more drugs off our street. And that's a good news story.
So tell me then about overall numbers. How many arrests have we seen around the drugs?
So we really put our minds to this with a full push in about August. In September, so the fall, if we will, in 2019, early winter was a very, very busy time. So the credit goes to our criminal investigations division. The men in that unit have done a tremendous, tremendous job, supported by all the great work being done from the road officers. Like, again, it's a many lift. So let me just kind of wrap up what we've seen. In 2019, again, it's more the last two quarters of that year. Over just under 119 grams of fentanyl were taken from the streets. You have to understand that would equate to about anywhere between 1,200 and 2,400 single usages. So that could be up to 2,400 hits, if you will, for one person. We've seen cocaine taken off the streets, both crack and powder, crystal meth, heroin. And now we see a series of other prescription drugs being misused, Xanax, hydromorphone. We have some illegal marijuana. When we say illegal marijuana, we know that marijuana has been legalized. However, there is still a process and a manner in which, A, it has to be grown, A, it has to be sold, and these are the circumstances that we haven't. So in 2019, we seized $196,632 street value dollars of drugs off the street. That's $200,000 taken away from would-be drug dealers in our community. Again, that's the street value. So for people to use, people have to source that kind of money. We know that, unfortunately, people will use other subsidies they've received from the province or from the county to buy drugs, which means they're not eating well, their families may be not eating well, they're not living well. We know that they're also will resort to crime to support these habits. And we've seen a lot of those arrests as well.
Can you put these numbers into context with previous years?
Not as much, because we didn't. This has kind of blown up in our community over the last 2 years. And in 2018, we didn't have as aggressive, I guess. I don't like the word aggressive, but we haven't had as an aggressive attack on this as we have in the last 2 years. But this is a huge increase. And I don't like to use those kind of language, but it's a significant difference for sure.
Can you tell us or help us understand what has changed from your perspective then that has brought this about? Because let's be honest, drugs have always been in this community.
Yep.
I mean, they've always been around, but it's always seemed like something that was very much behind the scenes, or at least below the surface. It wasn't
right.
as public as it's become. What's gone on this year that's caused this flip where suddenly it's just gurgled up and all of a sudden your force is doing more and there's a lot more taking place on a lot of different levels?
Well, the epidemiologist, I'm sure, will have a far better and more educated answer to that than I will. But I'll just say that this migration from the Greater Toronto Area, the availability of this drug, it wasn't as available here 3 years ago as it is. It's very, very available now. We as a police service, we're not enforcing this area of police work as diligently or as aggressively as we have. I take great pride in when our investigators speak with individuals that we actually hear rhetorically from people that it's not safe to bring your drugs into Coburg because you're going to get arrested here. I like to hear that. We work very closely with the Ontario Provincial Police. We were recently we had some great information that we worked with them on an arrest in Campbellford. We work with Port Hope. Port Hope helped us on a very a larger scale investigation. Well, it began large. It ended up watering down to some small arrests, but we'll take them. So this is something that we approach globally in the sense of our policing partners, share the information with our police partners in Belleville, the police partners in Peterborough. We haven't encountered the opioid deaths that they seem to be encountering in Peterborough. We seem to be ahead of that, which is a good news story. However, we are not going to allow people to bring drugs into Coburg. We're not going to allow people to start peddling their wares here in Northumberland County without fear of us trying to affect these arrests.
Are there newer elements, though, that are starting to come into our town? Because you talk to some people and they say, you know, a lot of people from away or from outside of our area are coming in, and they're the
I'm not going to live in the world that everybody that's causing us our problems are not from Coburg. A lot of our people are from Northumberland County. The initiative that we launched at our public meeting, which is threefold really, but called the Keep It Close initiative. The one part of it was the strong policing approach, which we're talking about here today. The other part is to work collaboratively with the homeless situation in the town and in the county, as well as recognizing those people within our community who need that help and trying to work with MHART to get them. What I'm alarmed about is obviously there's an increase in fear from the people in this culture. Because now you're starting to see things like loaded 45 caliber handgun seized, three imitation firearms, credit card knives, bear mace, a conducted energy weapon, four prohibited knives. So now when our officers are starting to do these search warrants and starting to make these arrests, it is more common that we're finding a knife, a taser, an imitation of a firearm. And in an imitation of a firearm, some people go, well, it's just a plastic gun. You know what? For the men and women who are on our streets keeping us safe at night, that just plastic gun in the wee hours of the morning is going to make a difference for how they're going to react to a call. So I take imitation guns as serious as real guns.
So what does that tell us? Just for people who don't understand policing, when you're starting to come across weapons of these natures, what is that communicating to you? What's going on?
That there's a fear within the culture of people who are using drugs and are buying these drugs. So now what's happening is they're starting to arm themselves. So things are occurring such that people are feeling afraid. So this is not necessarily the average person on the street that we're stopping, all of a sudden they have an imitation gun. No, this is people that are mixed into these culture, because these things that I'm listing off, these are all seized at search warrants. So it's people within subject of the investigation that we're grabbing these weapons from. So that violence that we hear about in the greater Toronto area, and those concerns, yes, we don't have shootings, thankfully, and yes, we don't have wide-scale beatings, thankfully, but we're starting to see the byproduct of credit card knives, flip knives, switchblades, concealable knives, bear mace, which is a relatively common event from any hunting store. But again, the imitation firearms is alarming.
So this within the culture, the drug culture itself is an escalation in terms of the seriousness. Wow. So on that note, we're going to come back. We're going to talk about this Keep It Close campaign. But right now, just to let you know, I'm with Cobourg Police Chief Paul Vandegraaff, and we've been talking about the drug crisis in Cobourg. Please stay tuned to consider this on Northumberland 89.7, your truly local source for news. We'll be right back. Hello and welcome back. This is Consider This Northumberland, and I'm your host, Robert Washburn, and you're listening to Northumberland 89.7 FM. I'm talking to Cobourg Police Chief Paul Vandegraaff. The Keep It Close campaign, I know it was launched back in October, and at that time, you did an interview with CBC Ontario Morning. I'd like to listen to something you said during that interview.
We understand from a harm reduction strategy, we're not going to arrest ourselves out of this problem. So instead of worrying about the opioid overdoses and charges from that, we're just saying, no, we're not worrying about the charges. We're just worried about you getting the care you need and creating a hopefully an open atmosphere with our officers that when the person is ready to say, yeah, I need help today, I've got a commitment as Chief of Police. I will drive anybody in our community anywhere they need to go in the province of Ontario to get this help they need when they raise their hand and say, please help me.
So tell us about this Keep It Close campaign and why you're prepared to drive somebody anywhere they need to go.
Again, it goes back to, first off, it was a great opportunity there actually to do the Wei Chen show, a bit of a CBC junkie myself, so I got to actually go to the studio to do that, which was interesting. But this is an epidemic. We're not going to arrest ourselves out of this opioid crisis. We are going to arrest ourselves out of drug dealers coming to our community and taking advantage of our vulnerable people. What I mean by I'll drive, if somebody's willing to step up and say, I need help, then why wouldn't I, as a leader of this community, do everything in my power to get that person the help they need that hopefully ends this cycle of epidemic for them? So that's where I stand on that, and that's a personal thing, and I personally do mean that. I stand behind that. If anybody in our community says, I need to get here or get there and I'll be better for it, we'll do that. And we've sent officers to different communities to move people if we have to move them. Our Keep It Close initiative, we recognize who in our community is really in need, who is really struggling, who are in that lived experience mode. We work with the Greenwood Coalition, we work with the county, we work with the town, we work with our paramedics, we work with our fire services. We know who these people are, we keep them close. We our MHART team, so Constable Moeller and our crisis worker, Amy Erickson, they're out there every day meeting with these people, checking in with these people, trying to access them services as they need them. We've actually rejigged the lobby a little bit in that when people come to overnight in our lobby, that's great. We still provide that service. Only you have to be now willing to raise your hand and saying, and I'm willing to look for help. You're just not going to come and just get caught in a cycle where you're not getting the assistance. We're really trying to drive that other piece. And the piece upon that part of that CBC interview that we didn't hear was also that when people come into our communities and try to prey on our people, we're going to keep them close too, and we're going to arrest them and hold them accountable for their criminal behavior. This is not a soft on crime approach. This is actually a two-pronged approach. One is very strong policing initiatives, seconded with a harm reduction strategy and good social development.
So when you're talking about the MHART and the constables, these are paid constables.
Yeah, so we have a constable, Constable Nick Moeller, and he's partnered up every day with Amy Erickson, and she's a hospital employee. So it's funded by the Lynn. So we're very, very gracious of the local hospital in the Lynn, who give us 4 days a week here and 1 day a week in Port Hope. And what they do is they have instant and intuitive information about how to move people into the mental health systems at the hospital. So that has taken like our wait times for people who are in our community struggling with a mental health crisis, where our officers would be at wait times of 3 hours waiting to get through the system, where get met by the eMERGE doctor, get met by a psychiatrist, and then moved on to a facility should they require that. Now we're down to about an hour. And that's the great, and then Amy also has the training. She's a master's degree person in this, in the mental health world. So she understands all of this disorder. She understands the types of drugs that people are taking and what that can mean for what kind of a situation they're facing. And it enables us to really look for longer haul solutions.
So then how does this then integrate in with then the larger picture? Because you mentioned a lot of organizations which you are connecting with.
Yeah.
But how do all those pieces then start to fire together so that we start to see a noticeable difference in terms of the overall strategy and solving some of this epidemic?
Well, we're not there yet. In all fairness, Rob, we're still working towards that. So there is some really strong work within the town that we hope to see refire up in January here. We recently tried to bring some empathy into the situation, that we understand people, especially around transition house, are really struggling with the change from a high barrier to a low barrier. Being a Loft participant, like I'm going to see the various films there, I was able to partner with Ken Prue, and we were able to show Us and Them. It's a great empathy-based film about drug addictions and homelessness, and we were able to show it five or six showings, I think it was, and that was a great partnership the police service had with the Loft to deliver that. Some very positive impact. We have some very strong community-minded groups who are rising up to help us work with this, and everybody has a bit of a different view, but again, like I said, this is an epidemic. It requires lots of hands to help us lift this problem, and I'll take help from all areas.
So let's talk about the Good Neighbor Coalition of Cobourg, because those are the Chapel Street residents. I understand you've met with them. How did that meeting go?
Yeah, I've met with individually. I have met with several of them. Obviously, their issues are not necessarily with the police. Their issues are with the change in direction with Transition House. It's a really, really, really difficult situation in that if you didn't have Transition House, then I would suggest to you we would have 23 more homeless people every night. So there is this need for a form of shelter. Now we get into what kind of shelter, what kind of assistance is being provided at that shelter, where does that shelter have to be located, is it meeting the needs? So this is a different problem. I would actually say this is not a policing problem, although we are the social service of last resort in policing, always. So at 3 o'clock in the morning when other services aren't available, 911 does still get answered, and our officers will go, and I do feel for the neighborhoods. However, we have other residences throughout our community who have addresses that the police attend to a lot more frequently than others. And at this particular time, this is sort of the firebrand, if you will, in our community. And we're going to work with them. And I've had very positive meetings with the groups. I've very frank, open conversations. I think they truly understand that this is not only a policing issue.
But it seems to me, I mean, I've talked to a lot of county social services, I've talked to other politicians, and I'm talking to you right now. It sounds like everybody keeps passing the potato. You know, we need stronger, the county will say, well, we need this, and somebody else will say, well, we need that. But nobody's sort of taking it on and owning this. Now, in September, there are a couple of reports from your weekly statistics
yep.
that say that you were putting officers were walking through that area. Is
yep.
that still continuing?
Yeah, we move it around. So again, this is the frustration. I'm going to go down a soapbox here. So we have people are concerned about them hanging around outside a transition house. So we move them along, and then they move somewhere else, and it becomes a lot frustrating for the officers. And I can only imagine being a patrol officer in our police service when they come in and they see, oh, there's a new directed patrol. But directed patrol, that's where we ask them to, in during their time where they're not on calls, if they could increase their activity or increase their patrol activity. So then we move them from there to the Trinity United Church, move them from the church, we move them to the band shelter, we move them from the band shelter to the transit shelter, move them to the transit shelter, they're back into bank machines, they're back in the bank machines, they're back in my lobby. These people who are struggling within our community don't have housing, don't have homes. Some of them don't choose to have housing or homes either. But for us, I'm going to stand on this, that if anyone's expecting the Coburg Police Service to solve this problem, we're not going to do it. Like, that is a completely unfair expectation. I've been very, very lucky, and that council's been incredibly supportive of our initiatives. The board has been a driver of this, and I wouldn't have this success that we have here if not for the board giving me, as new chief, the opportunity to operationalize a vision that the board had collectively. The board wanted to see stronger enforcement in this area. So,
but you can imagine, if I'm a resident on Chapel Street, yeah, and I'm my kids are looking out the window and across the street, yep, at the Bell Building there, somebody's shooting up. Or that if I'm a mom and I'm standing at the bus shelter downtown and somebody's coming out and their arm's bleeding because they've just taken drugs. I hear what you're saying, but for them, this is on the ground. Business people. I've had calls from business people in tears saying they've lost 30% of their business. They're on the verge of going out of business. These things are happening.
What happens is we're getting into this vicious circle, and I don't know where, like the chicken and the egg, right? What, were we unsafe, or we're making this unsafe? And I honestly believe that a lot of the, so for instance, like I'm out in the community all the time, and I'm hearing very, very strong positive responses from people in the community saying, thanks very much for your increase this and making us feel safer about that. I understand if I were living next door to that, I would have concerns. Obviously, I would have grave concerns. But at the end of the day, every community in Ontario, to some degree, is suffering from some element of this crisis or epidemic. And in this particular case, ours seems to be focused around Transition House. But let me be very clear, when Transition House wasn't open, similar problems, different location.
There was a press release that came out Thursday, I think that was yesterday, and it talked about a woman being charged, and the woman charged was failing to comply to conditions set out by an officer not in a local business, yet she was back.
Yep.
How effective is this approach that's being taken? Because I know there's, like I said earlier, there's a lot of businesses that now saying this is impacting their ability to make a living. How effective is this approach that you're taking, or is there got to be more?
Arresting people, you mean?
How effective? I mean, obviously, this person was arrested.
A lot of times the police, and I had to go public with that, a lot of times the police, they're blaming the police for not holding these people in custody. Well, it's not a police issue. So when we arrest people, the provincial courts, the ministry has called the ladder principle. And as people enter into the justice system, they're supposed to be at the lowest rung, which means they get released. And then as they continue to commit offenses or different things, they go up the ladder. I'm not suggesting that everybody has to go to jail and throw away the key. That's not practical. It's not reasonable, and it's just not going to work. But if people are on conditions in our community, the other thing I've created out of all this is I've created a bail compliance unit. People who are given opportunities to be within the community after they've committed a criminal offense, that's a privilege. And I ask that they honor their privilege and follow their conditions. And if they don't follow their conditions, they're going to be arrested for the breaching of their conditions. And how appropriate or how effective it is, again, it's keeping our people close. We know who these people are. Just like we talked about earlier in the show, one of our road officers was fully aware that that individual was on certain conditions, that he was obviously breaching those conditions. And as a result of that officer taking that bail compliance approach, we took more meth off the street. So I think those are very effective strategies.
All right, then. You have been publicly critical of the way that the justice system is working. What's your concern about how this system...
Yeah, let's be really clear. I think the Canadian justice system is a really good system. We're fortunate to live in a country that has a justice system as we do. What my concern most about was people being released on conditions with no consistency to what the Ministry of Attorney General's principle is on bail. I understand that the Ministry of Solicitor General, now we keep changing our name, the Ministry of Solicitor General, we're law enforcement on that side. Our new Crown Attorney, Mr. Wood, is I've had meetings with him. I told him clearly I'm not critical of his office. I'm not critical of the Crown Attorneys or the great work that all of the judges, Crown Attorneys, Justice of the Peace, and everybody else does. That's not what my criticism is. My criticism is, if we're going to agree on a ladder approach, which we've agreed on, new Bill C-75 is changing it a little bit, but still same principles, I'm asking that the courts, the local justice of the peace or the local bail courts, honor that system and work the people up until such time as that we shouldn't have somebody getting released with 30 different charges and within 45 minutes of being released being arrested for committing more crimes in the community. Enough's enough. And that's where I become critical. Is only on the bail release conditions, and since not because of me, but in spite of me, we have deployed an officer to the courts to make sure that the courts have all the information potentially right at their fingertips that they may need to make the most appropriate decision. Again, I totally understand that I don't control the decision, but at the end of the day, if we have people in the revolving door of bail, and they're getting out and they're committing more crimes than my officers are arresting, that wheel has to be fixed because, again, as I said in that particular time, the fact that the officers in our police service continually go through these exercises and they haven't thrown up their hands in apathy is a credit to them.
This is not your first rodeo with drug enforcement. You did a lot of this similar type of thing when you were in Belleville and you were deputy chief and you were an officer in Belleville.
Yeah.
So how is what you did in Belleville different from what you're doing here?
So let's be really clear. I'm a uniform guy, so I don't want anybody to have a misunderstanding that I was a secret drug guy. That's never my. I managed drug units in my executive time. Never as a drug officer. So that's a very special person who can do this kind of work, the surveillance kind of work, and the time away from families and homes. But what we're doing now is, I think, exactly what we did in Belleville. And I think that Inspector Graham in Belleville to that day, he kind of had this really great approach back in the late 90s, early 2000s. And sometimes really old ideas are really good ideas. And we have a really great team of people at the police station here in Coburg who are doing really, really innovative work. They're completely dedicated to this. These results do not happen. They do not happen without the commitment of those officers working all days, nights, meeting with confidential informants, having all sorts of investigative processes going on. We need those, but then they need to be fed great information from the community, but they also need to be fed good information from the road officers. And my little piece, and mine is the smallest piece as chief, mine is to give them the latitude, give them the scope, and give them the ability to be successful. So I'm on these radio shows or taking credit for this, but I own none of this. The board and I are in a position where we've created the opportunity to be success, and the men and women of our service have jumped and taken it.
In the context of this epidemic that you're talking about, there are tipping points in processes like this. What do you see as critical within the current context? What do we need to be addressing in this holistic approach that you want to take?
Yep.
What are the next pieces in these puzzles that have to be put in place so that we start to see traction within our community, so that this, as this has emerged within the last year, start to change course?
Two things have to happen. We have to look at some long-term housing solutions. The short-term solutions are not working. I shouldn't say that. I guess if I was in that situation, it'd be working for me to have a place to call home. But we need to look at longer-term solutions so that somebody can move from what we call transition house into some sort of longer situation is the one piece. And the other piece is we have to look at increased addiction counseling. There has to be some work done provincially to create funding for effective addictions counseling on the street, at the street level, to enable those people who are looking for that opportunity to be successful and leave this life behind them to be successful. It was great at the one meeting that Adam Bureau hosted. I ended up being at odds earlier on with a person there, John. John and I were at a disagreement. By the end of that, we were totally on the same page. And actually, when we met at the movie, at the Us and Them movie, he came right over and introduced him to my wife. And we actually laughed about how we were at odds at that meeting, but we actually came together and we actually agree on next steps. And there has to be some addiction solutions. There has to be some longer-term housing solutions.
So you seem to see that coming from the provincial level of governments, that kind of funding?
All governments. The federal government has to step in across the country. The province has to step in across the province. We have to look at great opportunities that exist in BC because they are in front of us. What are the lessons learned? There's great lessons that we can employ in the province. The task force that Chief Gignac is campaigning, that needs to happen provincially. The CACP, or the Canadian Association of Chiefs of Police, the Ontario Association of Chiefs of Police, they're all working on drug strategies and different things, but it's small town Ontario that this gets impacted. When we talk about Toronto, we talk about Ottawa, we talk about some of those large metropolitan cities. These one or two homeless people just get lost, unfortunately. But when you hit small town Ontario, that's where it hits. And we had another opioid death here not too long ago. That has a family now who've lost a family member. We have people who have lost a boyfriend or a girlfriend. We have lost brothers. We've lost sisters. And that's the end of the day. Again, we're going to keep our foot on the gas here. Anybody's coming into our town bringing in drugs, rest assured, the Coburg Police Service will find them and we'll arrest them.
So what about the county though on the municipal level?
Yep. Like,
can we talk about that specifically?
Sure.
Because, you know, the county's in charge of housing. There has been some talk at the municipal level about initiating some housing opportunities as well. That's a key piece. What else can the municipal governments be doing to help you do what you need to do?
We all got to get to the table. There's this big meeting that is to come, I hope is to come. I'm still waiting for it. But this enforcement piece will continue, but we really have to come together as a group and start looking at the longer-term solutions.
Where do you see the leadership coming from? Because you're doing your piece, you're leading in your sector. But overall, who do you think has to step up and be the leadership in this case?
You know what? I can't put my finger on one person. I'm going to say we have to step up. So we collectively have to put our foot down on this and start moving on this. The county has a social services responsibility. We have to have a meeting with the county on this. We have to have the town because the town is the municipalities entered into this foray with their last budget. We have to move on this.
All right. If you were sitting across from, say, a resident living on Chapel Street or a downtown business person, or somebody who doesn't feel that our community is safe anymore, what would you like to say to them at this time?
At this time, anybody who wants to say to me that they don't feel safe anymore, I want them to actually come and meet with me and talk to me, and I'm going to give them the simple question that I've given a few people. What do you feel unsafe about? And then when we find out what it is, we're actually, because if we're unsafe about the perception that's out there, that's a problem, because I can't police a perception. If you're unsafe because somebody's a drug addict and they're acting out when they're on drugs in the middle of the street at 2 o'clock in the afternoon or 2 o'clock in the morning, well, that's something we can deal with. That's something that police, we can address, and we'll deal with those things. If you're afraid of cars being broken into, if you're afraid of your house being broken into, these are things that have been happening well before this opioid issue. It's going to continue afterwards. And we will work collectively together. And the great thing that I find about folks here in Northumberland, specifically Coburg, is when I put these challenges out, my phone rings, and I'm happy to meet with everybody at any time, at any place. And I just after the levy on New Year's Day, I have another meeting with somebody else who has equal concerns.
If I'm a listener and I'm sitting and I've been listening to this conversation, I'm not directly involved, but I'm concerned for the community. What would be your suggestion? What should I do? What steps can I take to help to rise to this call for leadership that you're talking about?
You know what? Get involved. Speak to your counselors. Speak to your counselors about what it is they can do. Speak to your counselors about pushing for newer, more innovative solutions. We're going to be coming into our coldest night of the year walk with the Greenwood Coalition. Throw a few bucks their way when they're starting to do a fundraiser, and have faith in the community leadership led by council, the police services board, the police service, the fire service, the paramedics, that we have a best interest of the town, of the county at heart. We're working towards a very difficult situation. We're moving, in my opinion, proactively together down the right path. Sure, everybody would like it to be quicker and faster, But I like the progress. I got to be honest. I'm incredibly impressed with the progress. The fact that we're even speaking, that's a good news story. The fact that people are care, that's another good news story. And the fact that from a policing standpoint, the officer's done a really good job, that's a great thing.
Chief, I want to thank you so much for coming in and talking to me today. And I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. I would also like to say to all of you who continue to write thoughtful, caring, and insightful comments to my posts on social media is not always a good place to debate issues, yet I'm grateful to those who demonstrate you can still have intelligent, considered, and caring discussions online, so thank you very much. If you have any comments, questions, rants, or raves, please email me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can go to my Facebook page, Consider This. Or if you are on Twitter, you can message me at rwash. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you'll find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking the time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this, Northumberland.